This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents Like She Owns the Place. Give yourself the gift of confidence and ignite your inner magic. This is the author, Kara Alwell Leyba. This one's for you, Mom. You had the power all along, my dear. The Wizard of Oz. Introduction. I am a woman who has spent her entire life obsessively trying to become comfortable in her own skin. I am a woman who has desperately sought ways to embrace every part of herself and to dispel the completely unattainable ideas that society has brainwashed us into believing. That women must be flawless, simultaneously feminine and strong, but not too strong. Successful, but not to the point where that success threatens a man. Beautiful, but not to the point where our beauty intimidates other women. Confident, as long as we don't say it out loud. And skinny. Don't forget skinny. The world has tried to zip me inside a constricting dress. And after spending years trying to breathe inside it, I'm done. I feel ready. Ready for a new way to do life. Ready to challenge the antiquated ideas and pressure from the media that have smothered women for decades. Ready to throw guilt out the window. Ready to raise my middle finger to diet culture, magazine covers, and self-help books that tell us we're sick and broken. Ready to show women that we are enough, right now, exactly as we are. I'm inviting you to boldly redefine confidence with me. I'm inviting you to question everything you were programmed to believe. Because here's one thing I have finally learned. It's not about the thinnest woman in the room with no wrinkles and toned abs and a $4,000 handbag. It's about the woman in the room who knows in her heart that she's a motherfucking boss. It's about the woman in the room who can give herself everything she wants, who makes others feel valued, and who turns that damn room upside down simply by walking into it. And she's not doing it for anyone's pleasure but her own. She isn't turning heads because she's the most liked or the most intimidating. She's turning heads because her energy is undeniable. The most confident women are the ones who feel it, and we can't help but see it, and want to soak in every single part of it because it's just that real. It's time we all realize we can all be that woman. It's time we realize that becoming her is as simple as deciding. Can you imagine what your life would be like if you were no longer available for the struggle? If you retired the idea of perfection and decided to fully and wholeheartedly be yourself? And even better, love yourself? Imagine you stopped putting your happiness in the hands of others. Imagine you stopped waiting for validation from external forces. Imagine you became intimate with failure, cellulite, success, wrinkles, imperfection, fuck-ups, and vulnerability. Can you imagine what life would be like if you just decided to feel good now? This is new territory for me, if I'm honest, but it's fabulous territory. It's liberating territory. It's empowering territory. And it's work. Maintaining the confidence I've found is a daily practice. It requires patience, dedication, forgiveness, and an incredible amount of self-compassion. It requires taking a good, hard look at my life and knowing when to let things go. It requires asking myself honestly what I need. You've probably read that confidence is a choice, and while that's true, it's more accurate to say that confidence is a series of repeated choices to accept yourself. What does it mean to accept yourself? I used to think accepting myself was a form of giving up. Somewhere along the way, I convinced myself that if I accepted my body, it meant giving up on being healthy. I thought if I accepted my personal best rather than frantically striving for perfection, I would no longer produce quality work. I thought if I owned my flaws, I would somehow let myself go. I didn't understand that I could truly love and embrace myself and be confident while simultaneously building a better version of myself. Eventually, through years of hard work, I began to reprogram my mind. I came to understand that the biggest act of self-love was bettering myself. Being healthy, embracing my failures, and feeling beautiful, but for an entirely new set of reasons. I came to understand that we can and should change, but it must all begin with love. I came to understand that an evolving mind is a healthy mind, and we should evolve as a natural part of our growth as women, not because society tells us to or because we're trying to keep up with others. I've spent most of my life trying to be more beautiful, skinnier, and so on. When I think back on how much time I've spent trying to fix myself, it makes me so sad. The time I've wasted starving myself into a pair of jeans or beating myself up over a mistake is time I could have spent laughing, smiling, and loving myself. The time I've spent waiting for the perfect moment is time I could have spent experiencing life. The time I've spent waiting for the right words is time I could have spent wearing my heart on my sleeve and, as a result, feeling all the raw, messy, and beautiful feelings that come with that. It took me a long time to overcome all the bullshit. It took me a long time to develop an unshakable sense of inner peace and become intimate with my intuition. It took me a long time to achieve real, sustainable confidence. My passion for my own personal development led me to become a certified master life coach so that I could help others too. I saw so many women around me struggling with their self-esteem, constantly questioning their own choices, and living for everyone but themselves. I knew I could apply my own experiences and success on my journey to building my confidence, coupled with the training and skills I received from my coaching education, to help women heal. It is now not just my passion, but my life's work. Through my career as a life coach, I have traveled the world, hosted events, written 6 personal development books prior to this one, and helped thousands of women become empowered and live their best lives. My goal with this book is to share with you how I have arrived here and how I've helped my clients arrive here, and hopefully save you years of pain, shame, and uncertainty on your adventure to find your own self-worth. Because girl, I know how rocky this road can be. I'm going to show you how to block out all the noise around you and how to free yourself from the opinions and judgments of others. I'm going to teach you how to trust your gut, reclaim your life, and rock what you've got. I'm going to help you own the place. Chapter 1. Who do you think you are? It's a chilly spring afternoon, and I'm sitting in the chair at my salon getting my roots done. I think I want pink hair, I blurt out to my stylist, Taryn. It's taken me 6 months to say this out loud. She half ignores me, brushing off my monumentally brave admission with a giggle. I've hinted at liking pink hair to her before, but never made a declaration as direct as this. As she continues to apply bleach to my head, I explain that I'm serious. No, really, I'm ready for it, I tell her, clutching my iPhone, which is filled to near capacity with photos of pink-haired strangers and quotes about confidence and living in your truth that I've been secretly collecting for months. My hands are sweating, causing the phone to slip from my fingers and fogging the screen. I've wanted pink hair for as long as I can remember, but I was always too fearful to do it. I was terrified of what others would think. In high school in the 1990s, while kids dyed their hair funky colors, I barely found the nerve to use Sunin to give myself a blonde streak. I've always felt connected to the weird kids or the outsiders, the ones who took chances and dared to live life on their own terms, the ones who risked mockery for the sake of their own self-expression. I admired their audacity, but I struggled with expressing that part of myself, at least from a physical standpoint. I was an insecure teen who struggled with her weight, so the idea of drawing more attention to myself with wild hair seems completely out of the question. I hated being the chubby girl. And being the chubby girl with weird hair, I just couldn't handle it. Seriously? Want to do it now? Taryn asks, like a teenager who's just scored a jar of manic panic and can't wait to use me as her guinea pig in her parents' basement. Should we? Pull up some pictures of what you want. I'll go mix some color and be right back. The next thing I know, Taryn is rolling a cart toward me with a bowl of cotton candy pink dye and a paintbrush. I'm frantically loading my Pinkspiration photo album on my phone to present to her. I'm excited and scared shitless. A few gut-wrenching, wine-filled hours later, I emerge from the salon with a few baby pink peekaboo highlights toward the ends of my platinum blonde hair. We decided to ease into things. I meet my cousin for brunch and feel a strange combination of pride and fear. I absolutely love my new hair and I'm proud of myself for finally going for it. I'm also convinced everyone in the restaurant is judging me. All of the stories I've played in my mind for so long are now on a loop. You're 35 years old. What the hell are you doing with pink hair? You're too fat for this look. You can't pull this off. You look like a moron. As I eat my salad, I mentally punch each one of those thoughts out with new affirming ones. You look awesome. You got balls, girl. You finally did it. You are going to inspire someone. It's taken me a long time, but I've learned that one of the best things we can do when those shitty thoughts creep in is to replace them with ones that feel better. It's not rocket science, but it's definitely science. More on that later. And honestly, insecurity creeps in for all of us, even women who seem like they own it. One of my biggest inspirations is Oprah. She is loved and praised by millions of women around the world. To many, she is the authority on self-help. Yet Oprah has battled her weight issues publicly for years. She's been open and honest about her struggles with the scale. In fact, in 2009, she appeared on the cover of her own magazine next to a photo of herself 40 pounds lighter with the headline, "How did I let this happen again?" In the article, Oprah admitted that 4 years prior, when she got down to a slim and trim 160 pounds, she thought she had her weight problem solved once and for all. But after dealing with a thyroid issue and hectic schedule, she hit the 200-pound mark again, and she knew she needed help again. The fact that Oprah openly admitted to this challenge and shared what she had been through made us love her even more. She wrote, "If you're a regular subscriber, you'll notice you've not seen a head-to-toe shot all year. Why? Because I didn't want to be seen." That kind of vulnerability is admirable. She wasn't perfect, and she wasn't pretending to be. She told her story in all its realness, something that takes a hell of a lot of confidence to do. She simply owned it. It's no coincidence her initials, plus her network, spell the word own. Patience is a part of the game. Oprah inspires me because she shows us that developing real, sustainable confidence takes time. When I think about my pink hair, for example, those few baby pink highlights that caused me so much anxiety and excitement were nothing compared to the bubblegum, to-the-root, bright pink hair I had at the time of writing this book. But in the moment, it felt like a massive change. And it was. It was more than a dye job. It was an opportunity to tap into my truth and to explore a part of myself I had buried for so long. I described that day as my coming out party, my new pink hair being my opportunity to practice authenticity on a daily basis, and in turn, develop a sense of confidence I didn't think was possible for me. The process of leaning into your truth requires patience. It's not an overnight thing, and it shouldn't be. It took me years to arrive at the place where I could start transforming my life and ultimately build my self-worth. Whether it was dyeing my hair pink, leaving a failing relationship, or breaking free from a job that held me back from being my most creative and passionate self, all of those decisions took time. Give yourself the space to evolve, and don't put so much pressure on the timeline. It could take you a week, or a month, or years, and that's okay. As long as you're moving, you're on the right track. And sometimes moving forward means moving backward, at least temporarily. About a year after I dyed my hair pink, I decided to rent a space in my neighborhood for my business. I had always dreamed of having my own headquarters, a space to write, dream, and host events for women. When the space I wanted finally became available, I made an appointment to meet with the real estate agent and put my name in contention. and I also made an appointment with Taryn. Somewhere along the way, I convinced myself that the agent wouldn't take me seriously if I had pink hair. So back to blonde I went. I remember walking into the salon and assuring Taryn, who was so sad that I was parting ways with my bold color, "I'll be pink again, don't worry. But right now, I miss being a blonde." It was a flat-out lie. The truth was, I felt I had to fit inside a box. The one I had so desperately clawed my way out of, in order to get approved to rent that space. See how those limiting beliefs can creep back in at any time? I did get approved for the space, and in retrospect, my hair color had nothing to do with it. I got approved because I was successful, I had great credit, and I was the best candidate. But my initial thought process reminded me that confidence is a journey, littered with twists and turns, and old voices that often get their hands on a mic, and sometimes a bullhorn. I've learned that all we can do is recognize where we feel insecure, choose new thoughts that lift us up, and remind ourselves why we burned that box in the first place. After getting the rental, I was at my local florist, which happens to also service the funeral home across the street. I buy myself a bouquet of flowers there most Fridays, and as I was picking out my weekly blooms, I overheard the manager taking an order. "I'm sorry for your loss. Who should the deepest sympathy card be from?" I watched him take down the information robotically, then field another call. Emotionless. Dealing with death like it was an order of sesame chicken. Really, I couldn't blame him. It was his norm. It was in that moment that I realized we're all going to die. None of us knows when. None of us knows how. So why are we putting off living? Why are we saving things for tomorrow like it's promised? I caught my reflection in the flower refrigerator and saw my blonde hair staring back at me. "That's not me," I thought. "Where is the pink-haired, carefree girl who doesn't care what others think? Where is the girl who broke her own mold?" I took my roses, went outside, and made a hair appointment. A couple days later, I was back to my new roots, and I've never looked back. Am I authentic yet? It took me a while to grow into my authenticity, and that's okay. Before we go on, I want to address the term authenticity for a moment, because I'm going to use it a lot throughout this book. But what does authenticity really mean? It's a word that gets thrown around often, so I want to clarify what it means and how it relates to confidence specifically. A common definition of authenticity in psychology is the attempt to live one's life according to the needs of one's inner being, rather than the demands of society or one's early conditioning. In other words, being authentic means doing you, girlfriend. Since that spring day when I began exploring my own authenticity, I've truly been in bloom. My hair has gotten pinker and pinker, and my life has improved as a direct result of that decision. It's been a chain reaction of living colorfully, and over time, I've explored my authentic self more and more. Though I've had my minor setbacks, I've been able to be mindful enough to stay true to who I am. I've reignited my passion for creating art. I've taken risks in my business. I've been more vocal in asking for what I want. And I've learned to communicate better in my relationships. And I've dealt with the often unsolicited opinions of others when it comes to my appearance, which has been a crash course in confidence if I've ever seen one. And in turn, my self-esteem has soared. In fact, I've coined one of my favorite mantras through this process: check your fucks at the door, which ultimately means do what you want and don't worry about what others have to say about it, because they will always have something to say, and it's completely out of your control. Remember, one day, someone will be taking down an order for your funeral flowers. Sesame chicken death. So let's just do what we want now. The experience of changing my hair color is an example of building my confidence in a way that felt real to me. It was an opportunity to listen to my gut and carve out my personal path. It wasn't an idea that I got from a magazine or something listed as a bullet point from an article by an expert in the subject of confidence. In fact, I don't believe there are any experts in confidence, not even me. There is no one-size-fits-all approach to this. How do you know when it's working? The same way you'll know if your heater is working. You'll feel it. Confidence is an incredibly personal feeling, and not one that can be defined by a listicle or a series of steps directed by anyone else. You'll quickly notice that while this book is about confidence, I'm never going to tell you what to do or who to be. I'm just going to share my experiences and the experiences of women I've personally observed to help empower you to find your unique path. The only expert you should listen to? Your intuition. How do you find your most authentic self? Listen to your gut. Aside from observing my own reaction to having pink hair and the way it's made me feel, I've become fascinated by the response from others and how it's made them feel. Something interesting happens when you make a bold choice. You become a mirror for others, showing them what's possible or impossible for themselves in their own life, depending on their self-belief. Shortly after I went pink, I spent a long weekend in Chicago. I was stopped so many times by strangers, I actually began counting. I tallied up more than 26 people in just 4 days who all complimented me on my new candy-colored hair. And on the plane ride home, I got to thinking about the reason behind all the attention. I don't think every single one of those TSA agents, strangers on the street, hotel concierges, and restaurant staff necessarily loved my hair color or wanted it for themselves. I think they loved the fact that I had done something daring. I believe they respected my confidence, which had been a direct result of my choice to be authentic, and perhaps they saw it as inspiration to be daring themselves. Of course, there have been adverse reactions as well. "It's only temporary, right?" was one of the first responses I got from someone who lives in my apartment building. "Cool Halloween hair," was the compliment I received from a cashier at a local boutique. And my favorite, "Has she gone crazy?" was a comment that made its way back to me from someone who apparently felt triggered by my decision to think pink. On a recent trip to London, I observed people staring, whispering, and pointing at me. For all I know, they could have liked my hair, but it sure didn't seem like it. Cultural differences play a massive role in judgment and opinion. So if you're waiting to be yourself until every person on the planet praises you for being you, you'll be waiting forever. Society, limiting beliefs, and why we don't need to think like a man. These mixed reactions are to be expected. We are living in a society that makes it exceedingly difficult to just be ourselves and to love being ourselves, especially as women. In fact, an 8-year study done by Vibeke Blydorn, PhD, from the University of California and reported in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology found that across the board, no matter the culture or country, men had higher self-esteem than women. And it's really no wonder. While one can argue that women are genetically different than men, and we possess different sets of traits, we can't ignore the obvious. Messages everywhere, directed at women, plastered across magazines, with advice on how to get rid of cellulite for good, or reverse aging, or think like a man, haunt us. The app store on our phones is filled with line-smoothing, face-blurring technology to help us alter our appearance and filter ourselves into perfection. I don't know about you, but I've definitely fallen into the trap of smoothing out my forehead before posting a selfie on Instagram. It's taken a real effort to explore and correct this behavior and to realize that it's completely normal to have lines on my face. What a concept, right? On top of the pressure to look perfect, we're expected to embody countless contradictions. On the one hand, badass women are supposed to climb the corporate ladder, crush their competition, and be ruthless in their careers. And yet we're also told to be soft and feminine at home. It's downright overwhelming. In fact, research has found that most men like the idea of dating a smart woman, unless that woman happens to be smarter than they are. Being with a woman who is too intelligent is intimidating and ultimately a turnoff. To that I say, find the minority. A quick Google search on how to gain confidence will flood us with the notion that we're essentially screwed when it comes to learning how to feel good about ourselves and build our self-esteem. We are constantly inundated with messages that we're not enough and that we are broken messes that need fixing. And it's destroying us. We are criticized and made to think that we need to be more masculine or be a bitch in order to command respect and develop our self-worth. We're made to believe we need to have a hard, emotionless shell when it comes to feelings and relationships, and an aggressive attitude in the workplace. And speaking of the workplace, can we talk about that? I've come across many women in my own career who have been bullies. Women who are so defensive that they feel they need to tear others down in order to feel better about themselves. Women who feel they need to be nasty and intimidating if they want to be seen. Through my own work and experiences, I've learned to identify this facade immediately. It makes me sad because I know we're better than this, and I know where it all comes from. This toxic messaging that we're not enough begins early in our lives. From the start, we're taught to strive for an unrealistic ideal. According to research, 7 in 10 girls believe they are not good enough or don't measure up in some way. An astounding 98% of girls feel there is an immense pressure to look a certain way, especially from external sources. And 74% of girls say they feel pressured to please everyone. This brainwashing begins in childhood, and it's not easy to shake off. In fact, it stays with most of us for a long, long time. In my life coaching practice, I work with women who are fed up with the struggle and want to make positive changes to become happier. They're sick of living in a hamster wheel of self-loathing and desperately want to feel better, but lack the confidence to make it happen. When guiding women on this journey, the first thing we must unpack is why they want to change in the first place. I typically ask these women a question I'd like you to ask yourself right now. What do you truly want? And why do you want it? It's so important to clear out all the outside noise and the voices that tell us what we should want, liposuction, a sprawling beach house, and a mind like a man, so we can dig deep and figure out what actually excites us on a soul level. We can differentiate healthy change, like wanting to pursue our passions, dye our hair pink, or develop a healthier lifestyle, for example, from all the other bullshit we've been fed. This is the first step to developing sustainable confidence. If you're listening to this book, I sense that you probably want something that, up until this point, you may have lacked the confidence to go out and get. What is it? I urge you to write about it. This is meant to be an interactive experience, so grab a pen because I'm going to get you thinking. Once we're clear on what we want, the real work comes in. Battling against our limiting beliefs, our desire to fit in, and our fear of judgment. Although my clients are successful, intelligent professionals, and although they have accomplished so much, they still struggle with finding the conviction to live their truths. They still want to please those around them rather than run the risk of ruffling some feathers, or worse, being rejected. They truly want to push past their comfort zones and invite healthy change into their lives, but their fears stop them. They have desires that they're afraid to express and dreams they've grown accustomed to burying. I was getting my hair touched up the other day, and a woman in her 50s came up to me and said, "I wish I could have hair like yours." I told her she could. "But my kids would think I was crazy," she replied. I actually think they'd be pretty impressed with your conviction," I told her. She agreed, but didn't feel she could get past the risk of them not accepting her. It was heartbreaking. She was denying something she really wanted to do because she was worried about someone else's opinion. The question of what will people think comes up more than any other. And I get it. We have been sold lies for our entire lives. As I mentioned, the women I work with are brilliant and talented, but their anxiety often gets the best of them. And it's no coincidence. According to the Anxiety and Depression Association of America, women are twice as likely to have anxiety disorder as men. And the most common disorder to co-occur in women with anxiety is depression. So we're scared and sad. Not a good place to be. While this statistic is alarming, the great news is that it's something we can actively work on. My friend and colleague, Dr. Fritz Gallette, once offered me great advice about anxiety that changed my life. He explained that anxiety is simply an energy, one that we can channel into positivity, one that we can use to propel our ideas, something that can help us thrive. That statement was powerful to me. At the time, I was suffering from my own issues with anxiety, and Dr. Gallette's suggestion encouraged me to work on shifting those feelings. I became more mindful of my anxious moments and realized that more often than not, I was basing my reality in irrational thoughts or things that would probably never happen. I began introducing best-case scenarios into my thinking and focusing on what could go right. Rather than stuff down those nervous feelings, I addressed them, I worked through them, and I came out stronger. So when it comes to building confidence, if we can reframe our thinking and view the desire to change as an opportunity to grow and ultimately feel better, we can get ourselves on a positive path. It all boils down to rewiring our thought patterns and writing a new story for ourselves. It comes down to believing that despite our past and despite our surroundings, we have a choice to change. We have a choice to become who we want to be, which for many of us means being a more confident, more self-assured woman. What choice are you ready to make? What's your story? Now that you know what you want, it's important to know where your stories and limiting beliefs about why you haven't been able to get it yet come from. We grow up believing certain things to be true. These beliefs are usually instilled in us during our childhood and usually come from outside sources, our parents, society, other kids, and so on. For me, it went something like this. I'm the chubby, insecure girl who was kind of awkward and could never dye her hair a wild color. Somewhere along the way, that's the role I stepped into, and I believed it was who I was. I also believed positive things about myself, like the fact that I was caring, creative, and smart, but the negative voices are often louder than the positive ones, and for me, they were screaming. My story stuck with me for years, but somewhere in my late 20s, I realized it wasn't serving me. I had to actively undo that programming and start believing different things about myself. And beyond belief, I had to take consistent action to make my new beliefs a reality in order to achieve sustainable confidence, like actually go and dye my hair pink. My goal with this book is to lead you on a journey of self-discovery similar to the one I've been on for years. I'm excited to help you discover things you might not have realized about yourself. I'm going to help you figure out how your brain works, and in turn, be able to make sense of the emotions you have probably felt for years. Hello, fear and anxiety. And ultimately, master them. This will take work. Although I believe positivity rules, that does not mean it comes without making a mess first. Rewiring our minds is no easy feat. It takes courage, conviction, and vulnerability. It takes stepping out of our comfort zones and immersing ourselves in experiences that feel different. It takes showing up to our fears, recognizing their presence, and moving forward anyway, even when it feels painful or strange or isolating. For me, it was pink hair. For you, it may look completely different. The most important thing to remember is that getting to know yourself is an intimate challenge, and only you can determine the best path to get there. And if it feels bumpy, I promise you it will be okay in the end. Just hang on tight. I encourage you to think about who you truly are without all the baggage attached to the idea of yourself. Without the magazine articles, without the stories from childhood, without the fear of rejection. Who would you be if you were to be your most confident self? Take a moment to think about that or write it down. And here's something else to think about. If you choose not to be that confident person, what do you risk giving up? Another important cornerstone of confidence to consider. It's not about being like someone else who is confident. It's about being you. It's not about emulating the outspoken woman in the conference room with the razor-sharp tongue or dressing like the self-assured plus-size model who loves her body. It's about uncorking your truest self and owning every part of her. It's about examining every square inch of yourself, keeping what's true, and discarding the rest. Sure, we can and should be inspired by truly confident women who have gotten that way by embracing their true selves. But at the end of the day, it's about inspiration, not imitation. A woman once told me that she was struggling with learning to love her body. She said, "I'm trying to channel Ashley Graham, but it's not working. I'm still beating myself up over eating too much sugar this week and throwing my diet out the window." I explained to her that channeling Ashley Graham would never make her love her body. Real confidence comes from loving yourself and all your mistakes and imperfections and still facing the world every day with a loving heart and your head held high. Rather than blaming your insecurity on the external things like blowing your diet, the real work comes from asking yourself, what's happening on the inside? Are you happy? Are you prioritizing your overall well-being? Are you doing the things that feel good for you? Beware of the sugar rushes. Most of us are used to gaining confidence through what I call sugar rushes, like putting on an outfit we feel good in or shedding a few pounds. And sure, those things may make us feel great in the short term, but is that feeling really sustainable? Is that real self-worth that can stay with us for the long haul? I don't believe it is. My first experience in finding false confidence happened at age 11. As I mentioned earlier, I was a chubby kid, and not only did it bother me, it was worrying to my mother when she noticed I had gained a considerable amount of weight in a short time after my parents divorced. I was clearly eating to fill an emotional void, and it was a real challenge for me to maintain a healthy weight. I begged my mom to let me join Weight Watchers to help me get a handle on my relationship with food. She obliged, and during the summer of 1991, I lost 23 pounds. I clearly remember walking into sixth grade at my brand new junior high school that September, wearing a size small Gap shirt, a first for me, feeling completely different, not just physically, but emotionally. Suddenly, the cool girls were talking to me. Guys I'd had crushes on for years were finally noticing me. Everyone commented on my weight loss and told me how great I looked. I was high on all the attention, and at the same time, scared to death that it could go away at any moment. I feared that if I gained the weight back, I'd go back to being invisible. That experience was the beginning of the disordered eating and unhealthy relationship with my body that affected me for most of my life. I found a quick hit of confidence in my ability to control the scale at a young age, and it was a dangerous game. My anxiety over wanting to keep the weight off caused me to eat more, and before I knew it, I was on a vicious cycle of yo-yo dieting that would bring me anything but confidence. It has taken me 25 years to begin to accept and celebrate my body, regardless of my weight. I have now learned that being truly confident in my skin requires much more than finding myself in a certain size jeans. It requires a daily prescription of self-love, forgiveness, and patience. It requires an understanding that sustainable confidence is not dependent on anything outside myself. Rather, it all comes from within. I used to put my self-esteem in everyone's hands but my own. I felt beautiful only if a man told me I was. I felt successful only if I received a promotion at work. I felt sexy only if I was a certain weight on the scale. I felt validated only if others praised me. I now understand how unhealthy it is to live like that. I now realize that truly owning who you are has nothing to do with other people and everything to do with the love and acceptance you give yourself. I have learned that if you rely on those outside things to deliver your confidence, you will wind up depressed, confused, and on the fast track to self-destruction. Ironically, being yourself can feel like hard work, especially at first. You'd think being who you are would be the most natural thing to do, right? It's not always the case. As Brené Brown says, authenticity is a daily practice. It's not a quality that some people naturally possess and others don't. It's a choice, something we must work at every single day. In fact, I believe authenticity must be treated like a religion, a dedicated practice applied to our lives on a daily basis, filled with rituals and affirmations and practical applications. You must wake up every single day and say to yourself, "This is who I am, and this is how I'm choosing to show up in the world." If we don't claim it, it slips away, and we wind up living inside that tired story and giving up on our dreams. Although it may seem daunting, the reward we experience for committing to authenticity is worth every bit of the work involved. Being yourself and owning who you are is a high like no other. Power mantra. My authentic self is my natural state. I let go of my fear of being intimately and completely me. I urge you to write a mantra for yourself that inspires you to live authentically. Chapter 2. What we talk about when we talk about beauty. "You look beautiful," I find myself saying on a regular basis to women who radiate joy, kindness, and an inner magic that is undeniable. It's less about the way they actually look on the outside and more about the attitude they project about how they feel inside. It's an energy. But this wasn't always how I identified beautiful women. Like most of us, I spent my whole life learning and believing that beauty was a physical attribute. A woman looked beautiful if she had symmetrical features, shiny hair, or a fit, toned body. She was beautiful if she was well put together, wearing gorgeous shoes, and a stunning dress. She was beautiful if she was wearing nice makeup that enhanced her features. I started to redefine the term beauty when I noticed people's reactions to my beauty around the time I left my job at MTV to pursue my dreams. Suddenly, I was receiving text messages, Facebook comments, and in-person compliments from people I knew and strangers on the street about how great I looked. "Did you lose weight? What foundation are you wearing? You look amazing." I was inundated with these questions and compliments constantly. And as great as it felt, it was confusing at first. The truth was, I had not lost weight. In fact, I had gained a few pounds, and I wasn't wearing foundation at all anymore. I stopped wearing most makeup outside of lip gloss and a swipe of eyeliner after I quit my job. So what was it? Before leaving MTV, I was in a whirlwind of anxiety on a daily basis. I commuted 3 hours round trip each day on a bus and train in rush hour traffic. I worked in the heart of Times Square, or, as I affectionately call it, actual hell on earth. I was doing a job that required me to be someone I was not in exchange for a paycheck, which made me feel somewhere between a hooker and a fraud. I desperately wanted to live a life that felt authentic to me, to do what I loved every day, to work from the comfort of my home, to have the freedom to go shopping at 11 a.m. on a random Tuesday, or have a glass of champagne while writing at my desk. I so badly wanted to be able to cook myself delicious, healthy meals and have the energy to work out regularly. Yet, for a very long time, my fear held me back from living that life, and it showed all over my face. When I finally worked up the courage to quit and take the plunge into being a full-time entrepreneur, my entire world shifted. Suddenly, I was waking up without an alarm clock. I wasn't stuck on a bus all morning, packed with other miserable people living inauthentic lives. Have you ever looked around at people's faces during the rush hour commute? Yikes. I was exercising regularly and actually enjoying it. I could take walks and get fresh air in the middle of the day. On top of the lifestyle changes, things inside me changed as well. I felt empowered that I had finally made a choice that was so important to me. I felt fulfilled by a career that allowed me to make an impact in the world. I felt an immense amount of gratitude in every moment. That's the thing about not getting what you want for so long. When you do finally get it, you thank your lucky stars and you thank them all day long. For the first time in a long time, I was in love with life. So when people started telling me how beautiful I looked, when I had changed nothing about myself physically, it only made sense that they were noticing an inner change. A change that began in my soul and was ultimately being reflected in my body. I was happy, peaceful, and slowly gaining confidence. Something that had eluded me for such a long time. It wasn't weight loss or a new foundation that was making me beautiful. It was my energy that made me beautiful. What a radical observation. I encourage you to think about a time in your life where you felt most beautiful. What were you doing? Who were you with? Were you happy? Try to think less about what you looked like and more about how you felt. Sure, a gorgeous pair of designer shoes or a fresh blowout can make us feel great, but what really makes us beautiful is the way we feel about ourselves. Are you proud of yourself? Are you doing things that make you happy? Because let me tell you, if you're hating life and living for everyone but yourself, you will be one unhappy bitch standing in the middle of dry bar in your Chanel loafers. Trust me, I've been there. Ah, a thigh gap. I have discovered happiness, said no one ever. It's no secret that we live in a culture that prioritizes looks. We're still having beauty pageants where women are judged by the way they look in a bikini. We still have men's magazines like Sports Illustrated that celebrate the accomplishments of male athletes throughout, but feature half-naked women on the cover who are celebrated for nothing other than the way they look half-naked. I'll never forget the moment that problem was brought to my attention. I was interviewing Katie Wilcox, founder and author of Healthy is the New Skinny, for my podcast. My plan for our chat was to talk about the fact that plus-size models were now getting more attention from mainstream media. At the time, I thought this was a game changer, and in many ways, it was. It changed the conversation around beauty ideals. However, it doesn't change the fact that women are still recognized and celebrated only for the way they look. When Katie and I spoke, Ashley Graham had just landed the cover of Sports Illustrated and was the first ever plus-size model to do so. There's no doubt Ashley broke a barrier in her industry, but I'd be lying if I said that I truly felt her being on the cover built my own personal confidence. Did it help a little? Of course. But just because America's newest sex symbol expanded the definition of beauty doesn't mean our problem is solved. What about the women who still don't make the cut? The majority of women who still feel less than? Our arbitrary requirements for physical proportions still exclude most women from the term beautiful. And the strongly implied message is that they're less valuable, less womanly. The real victory will be when the size of a woman's lips and the height of her cheekbones and the width of her waist don't determine how worthy of notice she is. Beauty is not found outside us. It's found within. So how do we drop the idea that Botox and Birkins and bikini bodies define how attractive we look? And why do we even need to look attractive? Who do we feel is judging us and why is it even important? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we shouldn't strive to take care of ourselves or carry a luxury purse. Lord knows I love my designer duds just as much as the next woman, and my eyelash extensions rock my world. I'm a girly girl, and I love to look good, because looking good ultimately helps me feel good. However, all those things are simply accessories to my own inner radiance. They're not where I start. I spend a hell of a lot more time working on my inside than I do on my outside. And I know that if more women did the same, we'd start a fucking revolution. Because I have redefined beauty as energy, I am very cognizant about the way I talk to other women about appearances. For example, if I have a good friend who is considering cosmetic surgery and she asks for my opinion, I'm straight up with her. I make sure she knows how beautiful she already is. I ask her what's going on in her life. Is she happy? Who are the people she's surrounding herself with? How is she spending her time? If she still insists on going under the knife I beg her to really think about why she's doing it. Is she trying to impress her boyfriend? Is she spending too much time looking at models on Instagram? You'd be surprised at how many women are going to extremes, such as painful plastic surgery, to feel valued and worthy, and to keep up with the women around them. While we're on the topic of social media, I feel like we need to address what's happening there. I love Instagram and Facebook, and all of those platforms when they're used in a healthy way. They have provided me with a space to promote my message of female empowerment and directly connect me with my readers. Social media has helped me discover other awesome women who are also sharing positive messages. But it's also created a dangerous epidemic of unrealistic expectations about beauty and women. And although it's no big secret that people are seriously altering their appearance on social media, it doesn't mean we're not affected by it. In a recent Refinery29 article, Dr. Carmen Lefebvre weighed in on why we still compare ourselves to heavily edited images. It doesn't really matter if we know a photo is fake or not. We all have an automatic response to things we see. So those kinds of photos still have a physical impact. Cognitively, we know it's not real, but it still ends up reinforcing an ideal or new standard, she said. The more time you spend surrounded by certain images, the more you normalize that kind of look. Which is why I've made it a habit to not consume those types of images, and instead look for unedited, unfiltered women who are focusing on their message as opposed to their image, to be an inspiration and role model. If you spend hours every day soaking in images of women with prominent collarbones and thigh gaps, they will become your personal standard for beauty. Not only is this unhealthy and toxic, it's also a huge waste of time. How can you use these hours to build yourself up? On a similar note, have you ever flipped through a women's magazine only to end up feeling depressed and desperate? Nearly every single page is littered with advertisements and articles about what we need to fix about ourselves. Wrinkle creams, flat belly diets, and ads for fillers and age-defying makeup abound. It's actually incredibly offensive that this is the kind of material that's being shoved down our throats by the media. However, I also know that as women, we feed into it. We are the ones buying the creams, getting the injections, and reading the magazines. There's no doubt we've been brainwashed into thinking that we need to be flawless unicorns who are not permitted to have laugh lines or cellulite, but it's time that we start rejecting the idea that we are not beautiful as we are. We must empower ourselves into believing we are perfect, right now, without all of the enhancements. I'm sure that every single advertiser would be petrified by a groundbreaking admission like that. And that's precisely why they keep filling the world with their propaganda. Because after all, if we are responsible for redefining and cultivating our own beauty, what will they have left to sell us? Absolutely nothing. And here is something really important. We have the power, and maybe even the responsibility, as women, to change this aspect of the world for the better. If more and more of us stop spending our dollars on toxic products like magazines that only praise women for looking a certain way, there will eventually be fewer and fewer toxic products. Advertisers will say to themselves, it seems like no one cares about looking perfect anymore. Let's make something else. As our preferences change, so will the ideals we consume. Isn't it empowering to realize that you can shift demand and make the world better for so many women? Back to social media. I am much more excited about a woman who is willing to challenge the new status quo and post a photo of herself with zero edits. Isn't that real confidence anyway? In my opinion, editing yourself to look nothing like yourself is a giant red flag of insecurity. A few months ago, I shared a selfie on Instagram with some beautiful and very raw thoughts in the caption. It was amusing about women learning to stand in their own power. It was meant to empower the woman who read it and fill her up with the courage she may have misplaced, maybe after she gained some weight or lost some hope. It was meant to encourage all of us, myself included, to freely proclaim our places in this world, to erase the lines others draw around our potential. I decided to post the selfie unedited, other than making the picture black and white. There really wasn't much thought behind not doctoring it. I rarely do anything anymore beyond using a pretty filter here or there because I like the tones and colors and the vibe it can create. I deleted the Facetune app from my phone months ago, not to take some radical feminist stance, but because I just got tired. Tired of smoothing my forehead. Tired of fixing the dark circles under my eyes. And I'm assuming you might be tired too. I woke up the next morning to a message from a friend who had taken it upon herself to Photoshop my selfie. She sent it back to me with my skin smoothed out, my freckles erased, and my dark circles removed. "Fix it for you," the text read. I felt my stomach drop as if I had just tilted off the edge of a roller coaster. Not because I was hurt or insulted, but because the woman who did this truly didn't mean any ill will toward me at all. She is a kind and amazing human, but after looking at my face unfiltered, she saw a problem. She saw something to fix. And it got me thinking, have we become so used to seeing each other with our lines smoothed over that we have forgotten who we are without masks? Oddly enough, the more vulnerable I become with my work and my words, the more comfortable I feel sharing a photo of myself with less makeup, or with dark circles, or with a little roll of fat peeking out somewhere. Those are the things that make us human. Those are the things that make us real. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to sweep those things under the rug or blur them out for good. Some food for thought. How do you feel about removing some of your own filters? How do you feel about letting some parts of yourself show that you may have once altered with the Facetune app and the delete button? Listen, I'm not implying we must necessarily give up lipstick, burn our bras, or grow out our armpit hair. I'm not implying we should forego personal style or femininity. I'm not saying I'll never use another pretty, moody filter or choose a photo where I think I look best. But there is certainly a line we cross when we alter our faces and our hearts so drastically that the cost of looking good on the outside is feeling pretty bad on the inside. I don't know about you, but my heart is the prettiest feature I have, and it will never, ever need a filter. How has social media affected your confidence? I'm sure you're wondering how redefining beauty works when it comes to attraction. It's no secret that most of the time, people are drawn to each other based on looks, at least initially. But here's the thing. No matter how classically attractive a woman might be, that attraction isn't sustainable if she's not radiating magnetic, beautiful energy from within. And people notice when a woman's confidence is lacking. While doing research for this book, I asked a handful of guys what it's like to date an insecure woman, and they all responded in the same vein. It's a full-time job. So while a pretty face may land a date, what men want in a long-term healthy relationship is a woman who feels good about herself. Confidence is contagious. Body image and beauty ideals go hand in hand. I'd like to preface the next few paragraphs by letting you know that I strive to be a very healthy person. I believe we should all focus on our overall wellness. I believe we should move our bodies regularly and lead active lifestyles. I also believe we should eat to nourish ourselves, choosing the best foods we can that support our mental and physical health. I understand that for some people, weight loss is a life or death situation, and they're under doctor's orders to slim down to lower their risk for disease and live long, fabulous lives. However, an alarming number of women are a healthy weight, but still extremely unhappy with the way they look. Scientific research suggests that we all have a natural weight our bodies are meant to be at. Metabolic suppression is a powerful tool that the brain uses to keep the body within a certain weight range called the set point. The range, which varies from person to person, is determined by genes and life experience. Regardless of how many diets we go on, we'll often gain the weight back because our body has that specific place where it likes to settle. Ever notice you always shift back to the same weight when you come off a restrictive diet or a rigorous workout routine? It's not a coincidence. In neuroscientist Sandra Ahmet's book, Why Diets Make Us Fat, she discusses this research and why mindful eating is